and welcome to Literary Lunch, a light lunch for your literary appetite. I'm Beth, and this is my co-host, V.
And I am V excited for today's episode, which is an interview with the one and only Martha Wells.
I'm sorry. I had to join it. I'm so excited. We are both really, really excited to get to talk to you today.
Oh, cool. Yeah, this sounds like it's going to be fun.
Yeah. So we thought we'd start off with a couple of two warm-up questions just to get into the flow.
All right. Warm-up question number one. What are you reading lately?
Oh, I haven't been doing a lot of reading just in the past few months. I was earlier in the year. I wasn't one of those people who kind of stopped reading when everything went even more worse than it had started. I've started Black Sun by Rebecca Roanhorse, and that's what I want to be reading. If I could make myself actually just concentrate. Yeah, that's about it. My reading has greatly slowed down. I even have a Doctor Who comic I was looking for, a graphic novel that I was looking forward to, and I'm only about halfway through it, and I just can't, no concentration right now.
Yeah, I definitely feel that. I was the same way, and then I picked up the Cloud Roads to read beforehand. I hadn't read the series yet, and so that fixed my reading slump pretty easily.
Well, good.
I guess that kind of leads into the second question we wanted to ask, which you don't really have to talk about it much if you're not comfortable, but we were sort of wondering, how has the whole pandemic situation, the global situation, affected your process, and how are you taking care of yourself as a writer, and more importantly, as a person with everything that's going on?
It affected it a lot. I was trying to get started on a new book or a new novella before at the beginning of the year, and was kind of having trouble getting started. And then March hit, and I don't think I tried to write, and I probably got maybe 500 words total in a couple of months, just not able to doing stuff and then having to get rid of it because it wasn't working, or it was just, I was not, it wasn't linking up, the continuity wasn't working. So that lasted until about the middle of the summer. And then I watched The Untamed, which is, it's a Chinese wuxia fantasy series. It was really good, and it's 50 episodes. I ended up binging the whole thing in about a week, and that kind of got my brain moving again, so, which was a big relief. And so I started working on a new fantasy novel. I will be doing more Murderbot, but I think I really needed a break and to try to get out of my own head about it for a while. So I've been working on that. It's going very slowly. Usually I try to write about 1,000 words a day, 5,000 to 6,000 words per week. And right now it's probably, I feel lucky if I get 2,000 words per week. So my output is still way down, but at least it's happening. So that's a huge relief. And I didn't realize kind of how depressing it was because I'm used to writing a lot, even if it's not stuff that ends up going into a book or something. I write usually quite a bit, and just not having that process happening, was really affecting me a lot. I probably don't even realize how much it was affecting me. So
yeah, I totally understand just slowing down during this pandemic, and it is a hard time to focus and to get work done.
Oh yeah. And so many people online, that you see a lot of people who are the same way, and it's a relief to see it where they say, I haven't been able to get anything done. I just can't, no matter how hard I try, and it's just not working. But then you also see people said, oh, I finished my book, and I finished my this, and I finished my that, and I've now written 10 books in a month and because of the pandemic. And okay, well, that's nice, but not all of us are wired that way to be able to, pull through like that, so...
Yeah, and I feel like it's almost been set up as an expectation online where it's you have a lot of time at home. You should be productive because, humans are productivity machines.
Yeah, and learn two languages and paint your house and, all this other stuff. And, yeah.
Yeah, it's not like we're just affected by a giant cloud of anxiety 24/7 with no ability to escape from the news, because if we stop looking for a second, something terrible will happen.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound right at all. We should all be doing great.
Yeah, I'm sure the comparison has been made to that new Battlestar Galactica episode where the Cylons were attacking every 23 minutes or something. And That's what the news cycle has been like for me.
I guess we can talk more specifically about sort of the first part of the discussion. We wanted to talk a little bit about The Salt Witch, which is it your most recent short story?
Yes, it is.
Okay, great.
And listeners, you can read it in Uncanny Magazine. It's published online. We also did a previous episode reviewing and discussing The Salt Witch. And now we get to ask the author herself some questions about it. Yay! So you've said in other interviews that short stories are kind of like harder for you and you generally prefer longer form fiction. What led you to write The Salt Witch?
It actually took me about a year to write. I got the idea. I don't even remember when it was now. Time is so strange. It's telescoping and expanding and shrinking lately. We were staying in Galveston Island, and there was a night where the wind had come up, but it was very humid, and it was just this really electric quality to it. And that kind of gave me the original idea. And I think I wrote maybe the first paragraph and was kind of really unhappy with it and did a few notes on it. But I kept coming back to it over the course of a year, and I finally figured out the voice for the main character. And once I did that, it started to go a little better. And then I would just keep going back to it in between working on Murderbot all that time. And so I keep going back to it and looking over what I had and expanding on it a little bit and putting a little bit more work in. And until finally, I think it was October of last year, I think I finally had a finished version and I was able to submit it to Uncanny. And then ended up revising it again with some from their editorial advice. And I was pretty much revising it up until the last copy edit call for changes on the magazine and right before it went out. So, yeah.
So Beth and I really loved the story. We were talking about like how it's such a powerful story about like the oppressed taking back their power from the oppressors. And was there a specific inciting incident that brought that theme about, or is it more just like a reflection of the general climate?
It's probably a reflection of the general climate. It's just a lot of things I've been thinking about for a long time. Also, death is a very big factor in it. And probably what sparked the story was the feeling that, especially along the coast and in these places where climate change is just raging unchecked pretty much now, and it particularly felt very hopeless at the time when I started writing it. Not that it's particularly hopeful now or anything, but it felt pretty hopeless then. And just that feeling of that places you love are going to disappear. You know, we're having all these environmental protections being removed. We're having national parks and Native American lands just being taken away and given to oil companies for exploitation and just all this other kind of stuff. And just this idea that places you love are going to disappear and there's nothing you can do about it. And that kind of inevitability was a lot of what fueled the story, that these places that I've been going to since I was a kid, that I go to with my friends and my family, are going to be underwater and people aren't going to have any place to live, that live down there, that can't afford to move anywhere else. What's going to happen to them? All those kind of feelings.
Yeah, it's definitely terrifying to think about. And in that sense, the story with the hotel as a refuge is like a very powerful symbol. So the tone of The Salt Witch is different from the Murderbot Diaries or the books of the Raxora. It's a lot more sort of abstract than a lot of your other work. Was the stylistic shift difficult to write, or was it a nice change of pace?
It wasn't difficult. It really comes with the character voice, because for me, once I get the character voice, that kind of determines the whole tone and feel of the story. And so it came along with that. So it wasn't really difficult. The difficult part was finding that voice. And I kind of played with a bunch of different things and the story just felt flat. And then until I hit the first line. Yeah, it wasn't really a problem. I've written kind of in a bunch of different ways over my career, so it's not that much of a problem for me to shift back and forth.
That's really important. Like, I'm actually working on that kind of thing in my own writing. I feel like I have like one tone and all my characters are like this person A, this person B.
Yeah, that was just a little bit different. And that was kind of one of the things I realized about the character early on, is that this was her home she was saving, even if she didn't know it. And yeah, I do tend to write outsider characters a lot. But again, this story really felt driven by the character in a lot of ways. And it was probably kind of delving into some stuff. My feelings about, you know, these places you love that are disappearing. So it's probably came out of more personal things. Well, all my writing comes out of personal things, to be honest. But this is just a slightly different perspective than I'd ever used before.
Yeah, that actually really connects to the line where it said, anyone can make a refuge into hell. Yeah. So it's kind of like what people are doing to Earth.
Yeah.
So what draws you to genre fiction? Like, what do you think makes it so powerful and so interesting to so many readers?
It's something I've always been drawn to ever since I was a little kid. I mean, I just glommed on to science fiction and fantasy really early in the library that we would go to in Fort Worth. The science fiction and fantasy section was right next to the children's book section. And you were supposed to turn a corner to get to the rest of the children's books. And I never did. I didn't realize that for a long time. I just went straight down the wall into the adult science fiction and fantasy. And for one thing, for me, we didn't have YA at that time. That genre hadn't been created yet. So you had kids' books and then adult books, and there was really not a lot in between. But a lot of the kids' books, especially that I was running into, I really liked kind of adventure stories, you know, kids exploring stuff, creepy old houses, strange places, that kind of thing. And a lot of those books were overwhelmingly boys. If girls were around, a lot of times the girl was the babysitter or the load. You didn't see a lot of things where girls were, you know, she could be the assistant, maybe, you know. And science fiction and fantasy, I was finding a lot more books with female main characters, or at least women who got to do things too, along with the male main characters, like Andre Norton, F.M. Busby books, which I probably read, you know, a lot of stuff I probably read before, you know, way too early that were a little too old for me. But that was one of the big reasons for me. And then we had a TV channel that was back when you didn't have cable or anything. You just literally had like five channels. And we had an independent station that would show a lot of old horror movies and, you know, monster movies, Godzilla and stuff like that. And as in, and then it would show the cartoons and everything. And so that's one other thing I kind of got really into really early. It was the most exciting thing on TV. So that was my reason. But I don't know why most people do. I mean, it's so much fun. And it's an escape. It takes you out. It takes you out of your own life, but it can still deal with things that are important, that are issues to you. So it's got kind of the best of both worlds, I feel like.
Actually, when Beth and I were talking about this in the episode, we were thinking, so I'm like such a girl who likes realistic fiction, but I was like really taken by surprise by this one, you know, like I really loved the story. And Beth was talking about how it really created a safe, like fantastical space to explore that kind of theme of abuse in, and like makes it safe but powerful. Beth, do you want to say more?
Fantasy and science fiction are both really great ways to access some of like the deep universal truths of being a human being, and or even just truths that are there for like lonely teenagers or for people on the edges of society. And it just takes it to another world. So there's that level of, I guess, separation from what you're really going through that makes it easier to read the emotions directly and not worry so much about like the trappings of it. And it's just really engaging it. The best genre fiction makes you realize things about yourself very sneakily while it's distracting you with the action and the adventure and all that, which is why I really enjoy the Murderbot book so much personally.
Well, thank you. Also, I think I was talking to someone at one point a while back about why there's so many post-apocalyptic stories for teenagers. And that's been the case, you know, for a long time. That's what I read a lot of when I was growing up. Basically because it's cathartic, and it's also letting you approach that concept in a safe space, like you were talking about, these and kind of deal with these feelings of, you know, abandonment, the what happens if the world's destroyed kind of stuff. And it's cathartic, and it lets you, I think, get used to those ideas and contemplate those ideas without, you know, being too terrified of them. But one thing I did want to touch on a little bit with the Salt Witch was when I did a podcast, Uncanny Magazine has their own podcast, right, where Lynn M. Thomas interviewed me for it. And she had brought up a point I hadn't even thought about the idea of layers of history in the story. The fact that, you know, Juana is seeing all these different stages the island went through, all these different comings and goings, and the different peoples who lived there over the years. And I was thinking, I think she asked me where it came from. I can't remember exactly, but I realized, doesn't everybody live with layers of history? And I think it's just where I live that, you know, you see Victorian buildings and you see, you know, things from the 20s and the 30s and the 40s and the 50s. And it's just those, that history is still so there, and it still so affects the present day, especially when you're talking about people who were living on the edges of society or who were oppressed or who were outsiders. You still see the relics of that past. So that was another thing I kind of captured in the story, I think, without even really thinking about it, because to me, that's so normal. As you see all that, you see the past is still here and still very much vitally affecting how people act in the present.
And we like to pretend it's not.
Another thing I really loved about the story, too, was the fact that when the Ghost Bride tells the Demon King no, you know, and reclaims her power, she is able to change the direction of her future, you know, despite the fact that she has been held, essentially held captive in this abusive relationship in the past. And Beth and I were thinking, like, that's just so powerful that she can say no and she can do that, you know, despite like the huge weight of history, that there's always hope for the future.
Well, it's a really hopeful and kind of happy story for being about a bunch of dead people who kind of died horribly in various ways. And that's one of the things reviewers have commented on. It's like, well, who wants to read a sad story about people who died in terrible ways, you know?
Yeah, I really enjoyed that little bit at the end where all the ghosts were just kind of hanging out, having a nice time. It felt so wholesome. And I was like, oh, you know, I would read a whole novel of Juana going off and having adventures and coming back and, you know, hanging out with her ghost bride. But I'm aware that the story ended where it probably needed to end. But, I, you know.
Well, that's always a good sign when people want the story to continue, even though, you know, that. That's the ending, it ended at the right place. You know, people kind of want more. So that's a really good thing.
So do you see yourself writing more stories like The Salt Witch?
I don't know. I'm not a big short story writer. I get asked to do it more often now for anthologies and things. And it's like, they kind of have to come to me. I'm so much more a novelist. I think there used to be, when I was first starting out, I sold my first book it came out in 1993. There was this perception that you were supposed to practice, you know, you publish a few short stories to get your name out there and then you would sell a novel. And it didn't really take into account of the idea that some people are more inclined to short story writing. They're more accomplished as short story writers, and some people are more inclined to and more accomplished as novel writers. And some people can do both, but it's not a universal thing. So I've always kind of struggled with short stories, as I just have to get an idea that really kind of I'm excited about. And some people can just crank out short stories like crazy and they'll be excellent every time and just be great ideas every time. And I'm not someone who can do that.
Well, thank you so much for joining us for that very special interview episode. And we have some great news. In April, we'll be coming out with part two of today's conversation, in which we spoke with Martha about the next Murderbot novella, Murderbot in general, and for big Martha Wells fans, we also talked about the Books of the Rooksura. I'm very excited for you guys to hear it, and if you want to keep up with it when it comes out, you can subscribe to us on any of your listening platforms, and please support us at our Ko-fi. It is... what's our coffee?
It is ko-fi/literary lunch.